Welcome to episode 3 of More Than Just Maps. I'm your host, Ollie Powers. This podcast was created with the intent to help anyone in the GIS field get from where they are now to where they want to be, be that your first job, a career move, or just improving your GIS game overall. On today's episode, I have the founder of Eurista Texas, the one, but not only, Brian King. We chat about what it's like to start as an archaeologist to then finding yourself being engrossed in the geospatial industry. We also talk about lifelong learning and the importance of soft skills, like public speaking and writing, to getting involved in the communities around you. And now for part one of my interview with Brian King. So today I have Brian King with me. Brian currently works for Friesen Nichols as a GIS analyst, but he got his start in archaeology. Brian, can you give us the how you started and how you got into GIS? Because archaeology is definitely not GIS.
Oh, very true. Well, hello, everybody. Like Ollie said, my name is Brian King. How did I get into GIS? So I guess I graduated high school in 1990, and actually early from high school. And my parents wouldn't let me graduate early unless I went straight to college. So I did an associate's in architecture. So I've always been into mapping and exhibits and things like that. After that, I graduated. I went and attended the University of Kentucky, and I grew interested in anthropology and archaeology. And so I am a trained registered professional archaeologist, done work all over in the southern Gulf Coast of Veracruz, Tres Zapotes, Missouri, Indiana, Kentucky, Texas, some Tennessee, and so just all over the southeast. But a lot of the stuff we did within archaeology was GPS. We would use a total station early on. It was a theodolite a buddy of mine did in Mexico. But you're always doing mapping. And then I moved moved back home in Kentucky, and I started working in the CRM, which is a cultural resource management firm. Started dabbling in GIS as well. A lot of GIS, GPS. I like to call it geoscience because, a straight ESRI GIS is not the ubiquitous GIS. GIS is all kinds of different things. So I like to use the term geoscience because I think it covers everything a little bit better, because you can be mapping in the field with a GPS unit and then bringing it back in and running it within a Surfer or things like that. So you're still doing geoscience, in which I did a lot of in archaeology, planning out mapping missions, trying to develop data collection from phase 1, 2, and 3 in archaeology. You have, basic surveys, and then you go all the way, go to testing, and then full-blown mitigation of a site. So you're always mapping. At that point, I moved to Texas was, again, working at a CRM firm. And then finally, I just got tired of being on the road for 10 days at a time and then having 4 days off. I had a young daughter. I decided to move into GIS more full term. So I went and left and joined an engineering firm. Started working for SB Consultants here in Texas and did some AutoCAD, which I had learned from way back doing the architecture degree, 3D modeling, a lot of engineering work dealing with water. And the funny thing is the archaeology and the way you go about it and the mapping and water, because everybody needs water to live, it's all just kind of come together over the years. So I guess the big thing is I really just don't like not learning. I love to learn. I like to know what's next. So as things evolve, I tend to move that direction. And so that's really, after I left SB Consultants, I came to Friesen Nichols in 2011, and I get to wear both hats. I do archaeology reports all the time, but I do GIS high level, 3D analyst, spatial analyst, pro, a lot of web mapping, and now I've moved into being the drone leader, which ties all back into geoscience.
Awesome. So how has GIS just changed in the 9 years since you've been at Friesen Nichols? If you started in 2011, I imagine it's not what it is now.
Oh gosh, it's... it's definitely not what it is now. It's been ever evolving. I did my master's degree at Penn State. So after I left Kentucky, I worked in the work world for a while. But when I finally hit Fries and Nichols, I had already been into my master's program at Pennsylvania State University, and I did it online. You know, it was one of those things where I was working by day, taking care of a baby at night, and basically studying all night. But that allowed me to learn and help me evolve, because it'll help me push new innovation to Fries and Nichols. Early on, LIDAR was a big deal. Everybody knew the word LIDAR. It was a great buzzword. They couldn't tell you what it stands for, you know, but they needed it and wanted it and used it, but nobody in the company was using it. So one of my expertise and a lot of things that I focused on in grad school was photogrammetry, remote sensing, LIDAR analyses, and things like that. So I was able to implement that. So one of the things I recognized then was I was doing a lot of processing with LIDAR, and not many people knew how to do it, because if you screw it up, you really could do it poorly and then build your whole engineering project off of it, and then you might not ever know you messed up. So one thing I've seen evolving is LIDAR has become more ubiquitous across the state of Texas, per se. North Carolina was one of the first ones that had it across the entire state. So LIDAR is probably the big one, because now Tenaris has pretty much already processed all the LIDAR for you. As of a couple of years ago, you can get your 2 foot and 5 foot contours already. So a lot of the processing I did back then has changed, because it's all right there for you, ready to be downloaded now. So the state and national clearinghouses have gotten tremendously better. Back then, you didn't have a lot, so you had to. The LIDAR that I was doing then is basically changed. Everything's available to you. So the clearinghouses, you have the national map. Is available. The 3DEP is going on. Back during President Obama's era, they passed a law to basically get ubiquitous remote sensing LIDAR DEMs for the whole United States. And so that program has been going on as the 3DEP. So that's the evolution I've seen. And one of the biggest evolution, the differences is web mapping, the bracing the cloud environment. You didn't have it kind of back then, but now everything has evolved that way with ArcGIS Online. You have Mapbox, Carto. So everything moving to the cloud with the Amazon EC2 and the Microsoft Azure, you're seeing people move to the cloud. And so one of the things is just regular old computers. You used to have your tower at your desk, and now a lot of people are running VMwares and virtual machines across their company to burst up to the cloud and call it cloud bursting, and run their processes in an instant within the cloud of the Amazon, and then come back down and do the modeling. So you see a lot of changes that place.
That's really cool. You've been in the industry that long to see all these things happen. And I mean, GIS moves at lightning speed. The technology is constantly evolving. So, like you
Correct.
said before, you like learning. So you're in the right industry because there's always something new to learn here.
Oh, and it's just so robust. If you don't like learning, I really don't think this is the field for you, just because it is evolving at a tremendous rapid pace. It's difficult to keep up. You can try to find your niche, but you know, as you move into a managerial type role, I mean, and you're not in the everyday processing or geoprocesses and things, you really need to just understand what's out there and can you do it, and how you can implement that back into your daily workflow and help projects. And but it sure is fun to try to learn them all. But you know, it's just definitely a lot of fun. But you know, this day and age, you've got to really be good at most of it just to bring it all together.
Yeah, and you just manage, like, as you're moving up in roles, going from like a tech to an analyst to into a managerial role. A lot of people I've spoken to who have done that, they mentioned that once they're moved up high enough, they're actually not doing GIS anymore. So that they're depending on their techs and the people at fresh out of school to provide the expertise in a lot of this new technology, just because they've stopped doing GIS. They're now managing.
Yeah, I've seen it happen that way. Some people really want that. Other folks don't. At Fries and Nichols, we do something kind of weird. We have a professional, like managerial path, career ladder, and we have more of a technical professional career ladder. GIS kind of, well, you kind of have to do both, because once you start to add to your credentials and you become really good, or you become the person that's used the majority of the time on proposals to win work in the consulting world, well, then you become invaluable. Great job security. And then but then you start to change where you have to go to the presentations, the shortlist presentations. You have to go meet the clients and give them face time. So just you as a professional changes as you get more into a senior level position as time evolves. So you've got to learn how to talk with people. So one of the big things I see is you have to be really good at communication. I mean, you can't just sit at your desk. You could, but if you want to continue moving up, I think working on your communication skills, trying to perfect them, do the best you can. Writing is becoming more and more, you just have to have it. It's something you can always improve upon. I improve upon it all the time. I used to be horrible at it, and I just had to work at it. So, but you definitely got to be able to write down your thoughts to be able to communicate them to the world. You can be the smartest person in the world, but if you can't write it down and communicate it, you're the only one that knows you're the smartest person in the world. So, you got to do the presentations. They come more and more as you get clients want to present with you at conferences. So you tag team with, so you just got to get out there. So that portion, public speaking, and it definitely, you definitely have to have more of that as you grow.
And with writing, is it more of like just writing an email or writing a report or just everything?
Well, as you getting higher up over the years, you are writing sections that go in for into proposals. You are writing GIS services, SOPs. So, for instance, doing some work now for a county in the southeast, in one of the states on the coast, and built a geodatabase schema. Well, you have to actually write it down. You have to write it all out so somebody can read it on the back end and implement what you're doing. So, I've done 5-year strategic plans for different cities and agencies. So you have to be able to write those as well, which comes into understanding different type of analyses to help steer somebody in a good direction for 5-year strategic plans, like a SWOT analysis. So I didn't know all this way back when. It was just something that you just learn over time and continuously educate, but you have to be able to write down how to tell someone that they need this 5-year strategic plan, plus be able to communicate with the stakeholders of different divisions within the city or the agency, so everybody's on the same page. So.
On that same vein, a lot of times, I know when I was in school and finally chose doing GIS and geography, a lot of stuff that you're doing in school is like, oh, here's this cool project on like physical geography, or you're tracking some animals, or you're doing research a lot of the time, and then you get out into the working world, and it's never, unless you're working for a foundation like World Wildlife Fund or something, you're not going to be doing that kind of research for like 95% of the jobs out there. What do you think the biggest challenge that people who are just getting started are going to have to face when they get into their first job? You've mentioned a lot of stuff, like you're having to communicate a lot more. There's a lot of non-GIS stuff that you have to learn. What do you think the biggest thing that people should start brushing up on or start picking up?
If you talk to 10 different senior analysts, they probably tend to tell you 10 different things. I've given a lot of presentations to different community colleges and students over the years. I think you need to develop yourself as a young professional coming out. You need to take advantage of the low-hanging fruit and what's available. Build yourself a quality LinkedIn page. Market yourself that way. Get involved with the different organizations. URS of Texas, for example. There's other Texas GIS groups that are, more geographically defined. Like, I think there was a Syntex and there's SCOG and some other ones, but definitely get involved there. So the one thing you should start doing as a young professional coming out of school is automatically start building your portfolio to work towards the GISP. You might not want to go towards it, but it's a great portfolio to get together, and it's a roadmap. So if you look at it like that, if you decide to go down that road, that's fine, but it's there for you. It's available. So I would start, doing some maps for the Girl Scouts, the Boy Scouts, just something simple. Volunteer, and so start networking, because you'll definitely meet people, and some of those people definitely be around to help you out. So that's one thing about the GIS community is everybody's pretty darn nice, and they're always willing to help. And you can call the top guys at ESRI, David DiBiase, an old professor of mine who's the head of the education at ESRI. You could call him and say, "Hey, can you come give a presentation?" Most people, unless they're got something already booked, they'll come do it for you. So don't be shy. Don't think that you are too young, that you don't know enough to go get a job. To be honest with you, if I'm in an interview with some other people, the one thing I look for more than anything else is the right person. Is this person willing to learn? Is this person, can they get along with somebody else? Is this person going to embrace our culture that we have at Friesen Nichols, where we value respect and our colleagues and kind of make it more of a family atmosphere? Anybody can teach anybody how to do certain things, but the thought of you coming out from school and being able to immediately jump into an engineering firm to do their stuff, they're never going to teach you that in school. It's just work on your skills, make sure start dabbling in ArcGIS Pro. It's the future. Definitely start doing some of that. Mess around with some spatial analysts and 3D analysts, just with the raster imagery. But the other thing is just start learning where all the data is. Figure out your clearinghouses. If you're the guy or a woman that understands, this is where I get the good data. Figure out what's the bad data and the good data, and be able to make sure that you can point somebody in the right direction for valid data that they can use on their projects. There's a lot of data out there. I mean, just look at the state, local, all the different cities. They have different data. How's it being processed? How's it being pushed out to the public? Is it a web map? Is it a horrible old FTP site? Things like that. So I think that would help make you well-rounded at that point, but get involved is probably the big one.
Speaking of Eurasa Texas, you are one of the founding members of Eurasa Texas. Can you talk a little bit about how that started? I assume that you were involved in Eurasa first before you decided to start the state chapter. But that's a big thing to do, just decide to start a chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved and now how you're here and leading the speaker series that we run every month and all the good stuff
Sure,
that we do?
sure, sure. Well, let's see, where did it start? Initially, I joined SCOG early on back in, like, I don't know, I think I finally joined them in 2006 or 7 or something like that. And then I went to a couple of the conferences, but what I was looking for was I wanted to continuously learn, okay, at a high level, a really high level. And I went to some of the presentations, and I went to a couple of different conferences from other places, and I really didn't want to get into a vendor base type conference where I was just checking out vendors. I wanted someone to teach me more of an academic level as well. I started looking around, and I came across Eurasa, and I read what they stood for, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what I'm interested in: educating, learning at a high level, promoting GIS. So I joined Eurasa International. I didn't do as much with them, but I started looking around for chapters and being able to network. And well, come to find out there wasn't one. So I talked to a buddy that he had been in GIS, long before me, and he told me that there's been certain people over the years since the early 90s that were trying to build a Texas chapter and failed. I guess it was just a daunting task because it's Texas, and there was some people that wanted to just do it regionally. But so I called, wrote Wendy and them, and said, "Hey, what do I do to help start a chapter?" I never realized how much time and energy and effort it was going to take, but She told me that there'd been many people trying to do it before, so I was like, "Well, let's do this." And so I started working with Wendy back in, gosh, it must have been, I would say I wrote her in 2010 or probably 2011, and then probably 2011, and then so that's kind of where it started there. I talked to her. We started the ball rolling. She had a couple other people that expressed interest as I moved along with it. And she gave him my contact, and I met some other folks along the way. Sumant Malavaram, he came in shortly after, but I had already filled out the paperwork and stuff, and was working on the chapter and had it all submitted. And then Sumant came on, and then we just started working together. The Gita chapter out of Dallas, Fort Worth area, they I guess Gita kind of folded nationally. And so they were without a parent chapter. So Gita folded. Well, they looked to merge with us as we were gaining steam in 2011, 2012. And then they finally kind of merged with us. So we held our very first workshop at the Friesen Nichols building here in Austin, Texas. And it was a dressing workshop. And I believe we held that in 2012, and some of the Gita folks came down and we talked, and then I think they officially merged with us in late 2012, 2013, and they brought some money over, and that allowed us to build some of our infrastructure. But we had some ups and downs. We definitely did, because it was a bunch of volunteers trying to get it together and write bylaws, and a lot of time and energy went in. We did bylaws, we pushed it. We've since with Ollie and other folks around have since revised our bylaws and made us better as we grow. So that's kind of how it kind of got started, and it's just evolved. The speaker series, Sumant and I were talking, and I came to him in like 2014 or so, and I was like, you know, we need to do something that really separates us from everybody else, and that we can provide a service to the state of Texas and even outside of Texas. We don't like to say we're just Texas, because we have people attending from all over, which is great.
Yeah, our last one at the end of 2019, we had people from all over the world join in, which was crazy. It was amazing.
It's fantastic, and but that's always been my goal with it. It was never straight Texas, and so, you know, as it's evolved, you know, we started out, let's see here. Dr. Philip Davis out of Del Mar College in Corpus Christi, he was extremely instrumental in helping us get Eurysa Texas off the ground. Bill Hodge, the executive director of the GISP or the GISCI, was very instrumental. Bill actually teamed, Bill Hodge did, he co-presented the very first Eurysa Texas workshop with me on addressing. Which was pretty fantastic. So he was great helping us launch it. Dr. Davis, Phil, he actually would host our first speaker series using Adobe Connect out of the Del Mar College. So he would sit there and start it for us, record it for us, and let us present, and then send us the recording afterwards. And so that went on for about a year and a half or so. So he was extremely instrumental. A lot of the Texas A&M divisions, John Nelson was very highly involved as well and very supportive. They would promote us through Geotech. So we had a lot of support, and then they'd invite us to be on boards for national boards that they were running as well. So that networking allowed us to build it up as well. But so the speaker series just kind of evolved that way, and we finally moved on from using the Adobe Connect platform once we moved into we moved our website to Wild Apricot, and then we officially adopted Zoom as our speaker series platform, and that just transformed the whole thing, made it a whole lot easier for us, and allowed us to have a lot more people in attendance. So this thing's definitely grown. But the one thing we really prided ourselves on was trying to get the best of the best. We wanted, if we're gonna give a topic on soils data from, you know, the NRCS or the USDA, we're going to go get their top person to do the presentation. I don't, you know, so we always prided ourselves on trying to give the best to our to the people that are listening in, and it seems to have taken off. It seems like people are happy with it.
Yeah, definitely. We get people asking us all the time, when's your next one? If we don't have the next speaker series up, we get emails right away about that stuff.
Yeah, and we recently had a survey that we put out, and the comments were just fantastic in support of the series and what we're doing. So it definitely makes you feel good that all the work you put in, I mean, early on it was a lot of work. Now we're running very smoothly, and
I mean, it's still a lot of work, but it's not the same amount. It's not the same kind of work.
It's still a lot of work, but it's definitely, you're having a whole lot more fun these days, but it's a lot of fun to pull off a really great one. But we've got a lot more people involved now, so it helps spread the time and energy across to multiple people. Back then and early on, it was just, you know, Sumat and myself trying to host these and if you have any glitches. But now we've got all kinds of support, so as we've grown over the years. And so really, I think I looked back the other day, and I think I submitted some of the first paperwork for Eurasia Texas in 2011. So,
been a long time.
And I think we've kind of officially were recognized as a chapter not too long after that. I think I remember Wendy Nelson from Eurasia International told us that we should hold a workshop on how to start a chapter, because she said we started a chapter faster than anybody else. I think we did it in 6-7 months of trying to get it and to get approved by them to be an official, you know, Eurasia Texas chapter. Now, then we had our ups and downs and we had to grow, but it definitely was a lot of work.
Yes, it was. So one thing that a lot of people probably won't know about you is that you used to do radio. So can you talk a little bit about that and how that also influenced what you've done with the speaker series? Because I'm sure that helped a lot when you were getting that off the ground.
Yeah. You know, when I was at the University of Kentucky in 1993, you know, I was trying to do all kinds of things. I love music, and I think music helps. It tells you a lot about a person if you know what they listen to, and from rap to hip hop or whatever, from rockabilly to surf music. So I just always loved music. So I got into the University of Kentucky has a radio station called WRFL. I went and joined to be a DJ. And so I was there for 3 years and did a radio show every Sunday from 3 to 6 for 3 years. And first year I did the show, and it was a rockabilly, garage, surf, trash type show, old country music and things, and really enjoyed it. And the next 2 years, I was the program director. This is my second year for the whole year. And so I got a little bit of money and had to carry a pager around. And I don't even think they make those anymore. And then the third year, I was the general manager. So I actually ran the radio station or helped run it for the 2 years. So but it was a lot of fun because, you know, it got me out of my shell. Am I still the best at public speaking? Don't think so, but I'm not as shy as I once was, and it helped me with my public speaking abilities. I still get nervous, but everybody does. It's just, it's something I recognized that I needed to improve upon if I knew I was going to grow as a professional. It just happens. You're just going to have to talk. So it helped me when I was going to do the speaker series, going to Sumat. I didn't even blink an eye because I've done this stuff before. And so it was a service that I felt like I pulled off my past to help build the speaker series. And you'd be amazed on how many times I'm asking some of my Eurasia Texas colleagues, I'm like, hey, you want to do it this month, or you want to work on being the heir apparent? And they're like, oh, no. So it's funny, but I still encourage people. Sometimes, you know, life happens and someone gets thrown into doing it, but it's been very rare. I think I've only missed half of one in like 5 years. So I've pretty much done them all, but I think I was running late on one of them. So I think I can't remember who had to start it off. It was either Christina or Danielle, but they had to start it for me, and I was about 15 minutes late. So then I took over, but yeah, it definitely has helped me out a whole lot, because things happen when you're presenting. There's goof ups. You just gotta deal with it and move on. And everybody in the crowd realizes that things happen. So everybody was all trying to learn. And so you just kind of do what you gotta do and move on. And we've had some little hiccups in the speaker series, a whole lot less now these days. But it's just you deal with it and move on. But it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I can say, I know you've poked me a couple times to help run that stuff, and I've just been like, oh gosh, like those are some big shoes to fill. Yet here I am starting this one instead, so I can't
I
say very
just,
much.
you just gotta, sometimes you just gotta be bold and just realize that everybody who's listening is supportive. And they recognize that you're doing this as a volunteer, and it's just it's fun. No one's gonna sit there and laugh at you. We're all professionals. It's not like you're in elementary school. Everybody's there to help out, and we've got a great base that really they plug in and from all over Texas and listen, and they applaud us. So and like you said, they actually look forward to it. They all get together and have lunch, put 11, 12 people in the room. And I know out in Lubbock, city of Lubbock, they cram into a room and have fun, and they enjoy it. So as some folks from GLO, state agency, so it's nice to know that you're reaching folks.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the whole point of it, is to make sure people are getting something out of the organization. So I can't say how great of a job you did just by getting that started and getting it all together. That was fantastic.
Well, it was something for me. It was a little more low hanging fruit. I knew I could do it, and I knew we could do it well, and I knew it could be the backbone of our whole organization and help us grow this thing as a state chapter, because it was reaching everybody in the state. And you asked me earlier about some of the changes. Well, being able to take care of somebody virtually is a huge skill set within our discipline of GIS. I mean, GIS is embedded into every discipline you possibly can imagine, from cancer research to, engineering to, you're seeing all your maps on your weather maps on the weather station, KXAN, and it's just anything you can think of, it's embedded. So you can take care of someone virtually, your skill set is going to take off. That's another thing for an up-and-coming professional. Be comfortable with working on a computer, putting on a headset, and taking care of somebody and making them feel comfortable on the other end. And so I recognize that providing a service virtually across the state would help let us grow as a state chapter, solidify us as a organization across the entire state. And Ollie, as you know, we've actually built a lot of our infrastructure around the speaker series, which is automatically helps takes place of our workshops and how we do everything else. It's really been a key to what we've been able to provide.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Join us again in a couple weeks for part two, where we talk about learning through teaching, drones, and the importance of geospatial K-12 programs.